CBSI and the world. Behind the Black. Bob Zimmerman's here. I'm John Batchelor. Rocket Lab, one of the successful commercial space enterprises on planet Earth. We're looking for big things from Rocket Lab, and Bob has been my guide to understand the more commercial prosperity, the faster we go to Mars. Bob, a very good evening to you. Rocket Lab, recovering a first stage. How and what is the significance?
It's not so much recovering the first stage, John. It's reusing the first stage. This is the news. In January, before January as well, but in January, they launched four satellites into orbit on the Electron rocket, as they do pretty routinely now, at least anywhere from, they're hoping to do 20 launches this year. They did about half dozen last year, or more than that. So they did a launch in late January, and on that launch, it was one of their attempts to recover the first stage. And the way they recover their first stage is it has parachutes. It comes back down into the ocean gently, and then they grab it out of the ocean. And they've done several of these. Well, that particular first stage has now gone through extensive testing, and they have decided it's in good enough shape to put it into the production line for final testing to launch it again. And that's the news. They plan now to launch that first stage on another flight. They do not yet have a date for that because they have to do the final testing fit out and qualification work and acceptance testing, all this, the standard stuff. But it's the standard stuff they would do with any one of their first stages that they're flying for the first time. So that means that Rocket Lab is very close to joining the elite club that SpaceX is the only member of right now, reusing first stages and being able to save a lot of money and lower the cost of launch. Very big deal. It's a very big deal because it just demonstrates that this company pushes ahead and innovates. And it's not just launching, but it's also making itself a competitive company using innovative techniques. Once again, it doesn't do it the way SpaceX does it, but it's still going to be successful, we hope.
Part of running a successful space launch exercise is to deal with planet Earth and people who complain about how you're making a lot of noise and aren't you dangerous. We know about Boca Chica, but Bob introduces me to a California version of complaining. What is it, Bob?
Yeah, we got two stories. One is about Boca Chica, and this one's about California. SpaceX, as well as a bunch of other companies, want to do launches out of the military's Space Force base at Vandenberg. And SpaceX has been doing an increased number of launches, mostly Starlink launches, but some commercial and military satellites. And there are a whole bunch of other companies that want to launch out of there as well, that have their own launch pads that they've leased and that they're planning to launch. And the military wants to help them do it because it's beneficial for the military in numerous ways, not just simply financially, but also they get payloads into orbit. It's not just all commercial. They get their payloads in. And a lot of those payloads, like Starlink, even though they're commercial, provide the military with significant surveillance equipment. So they have been very cooperative and been working very hard. Now, there is something in California called the California Coastal Commission. And it's not a regulatory. It appears it doesn't have the authority. It has authority to regulate and maintain and make sure there's access to the beaches in California. But when it comes to the Vandenberg Space Force Base, that's a military operation, and the Coastal Commission really has no authority over what it does. But there is some cooperation between them because there's one beach that appears to be part of the, or at least adjacent to the Vandenberg, that the military has always worked with the Coastal Commission to make it accessible for the public. And there was a commission meeting earlier this week in which less than a dozen locals were complaining about the increased number of launches. And it appears that the commissioners were trying to figure out some way in which they could have some control over the number of launches as well. The military was there to tell them about the increase in launches and to offer several solutions to work together to make this work out okay for everybody. And the commission was complaining that there were no private companies there represented. And the military says, well, that's not the private company's venue. This is our military base, and we're telling you what we're going to do. And so the commission argued for a while about what they could do, and they took commentary from a bunch of people who were complaining about the noise, how terrible it is, and how increased launches might kill wildlife. We must remember, again, that we've had a wildlife refuge in Kennedy that's existed for almost 75 years that has allowed wildlife to prosper because it keeps development down. So this is all bogus, these complaints. But they couldn't come to any decision because they don't really have a direct authority. And so they tabled the issue to the next meeting in May. And it was clear from the meeting and from what I can read about it, that what they want to do is use the next few months to explore ways to approach this for their own political clout. And one of them might be initiating court actions. And I think they are going to be now looking for various activist organizations as allies to help them file lawsuits. That's where I see this is going. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But the military, of course, is the military. It's not the same as Boca Chica. And in the end, it could all be in vain. But nonetheless, this just tells you where the atmosphere is in California, the Socialist People's Republic.
The South Texas Environmental Justice Network, the Carrizo Come Crudo Tribe of Texas, and Save RGV. Gosh, Bob, this is a big crowd suddenly.
No, it isn't, John. It's a bunch of frauds. They're very small. They don't have anything to do with the general people in South Texas. I want to say that right off the back. For example, this so-called tribe never existed in Texas. Never existed in Texas. It existed in Mexico. It was small. This is an incorporated organization for political lawfare. That's all it really is. It's fraud. But they have teamed up together. They have been the ones that have been trying to block launches out of Boca Chica against SpaceX. This is similar to the California situation, but this is a case where they're going against a private company, so they have a little more play. And recently, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission had voted unanimously to approve a swap of land. SpaceX would get 43 acres of a Boca Chica State Park in exchange for receiving almost 500 acres nearby. It looks like it's next to a wildlife refuge. The reporting has been vague. I thought it was part of the wildlife refuge, but how could SpaceX give it that? But it appears it's land that SpaceX is buying near the wildlife refuge, so it'll expand the wildlife refuge and make it a state park. They've approved this. Now these people are suing to block the exchange. They don't really have any empirical evidence to demonstrate this, but they're complaining, and they're trying to block things, and they don't represent very many people in South Texas, and so it's a tragedy that this is going on. They will be fought, but we have, you know, the way the legal system works now, we have no ideas if they will win or not. They might actually, let's take the devil's advocate, they could very well have a legitimate point, but I don't trust these organizations anymore because they have routinely been shown to be playing politics solely for this kind of stuff, and there's usually no legitimate case. They're usually just trying to stop others, can gain control, and often to sue for the purpose of making a settlement to get some cash. That's what they've been doing for now decades.
I like to follow the money part. All right, let's go to Amazon, where the money is. Finally, is this a success? I don't want to get ahead of it.
You don't get ahead. Amazon did a test launch of two demo satellites last October, and when they completed that test, they said they were successful, and they expected to launch the first operational Kuiper constellation satellites in the first half of 2024. That would finally get them started in building this 3,000-plus satellite constellation that's supposed to compete with SpaceX's Starlink. They both companies started at the same time, and yet SpaceX has got something like 5,000 in orbit, and Amazon, a Bezos company, has still not launched an operational satellite. The story here is that the Amazon CEO, Andy Jassy, sent out his annual letter to shareholders, and he touted how much money they're going to make from the Kuiper system, but he basically revealed that they are not going to launch those first two satellites in the first half of 24. They're now looking at the last half of 24, and they will not be putting up production satellites, he says, in this year, but they will not be doing actual operation and providing service until next year or so, he said vaguely, which means that Amazon is still not there, and it might be a year before from now before they actually start offering service to customers. In that time, SpaceX is going to continue to grab all the low-hanging fruit. I don't know how Amazon can make it. It's going to be very difficult to get customers because all the people inclined to buy this service are already on Starlink, and people don't change this kind of product very quickly. And so Amazon is going to be struggling to get the people who are not inclined to buy this. That's going to make it difficult to get new customers. And they're not going to, or they're going to have to convince people to switch. And I'm not sure people will switch so quickly. Why should they? They've got something that works.
The way I imagine it, Bob, is that because they control Prime, the Amazon service, they could put together a package that would be attractive if you're already on Prime. I'm just guessing.
That's not a bad idea. That's not that they have other products they can package with it that would make it enticing. But you know, once again, the product they're selling is not Prime. The product they're selling is internet access,
right.
And they got to compete with SpaceX in that because that's going to be the prime reason people order this.
So
they have a problem. It doesn't mean they're not going to do well, but the delays are their problem. It's causing them significant value.
As a consumer, Bob, I welcome the competition because that can only help my price. All right, we're off to relativity. This is military contracts. What is relativity?
Relativity is a startup rocket company. They did one launch with a small rocket called Terran R. Then they abandoned that rocket and said, we're going to just focus on a bigger orbital rocket called Terran R. That's the bigger rocket. Terran 1 was the small one. And so they don't have any launches planned until 26. What's interesting, and so they bid on a variety of contracts, and they have a variety of customers who have already said they would fly on this rocket. And what makes them different is they print the rocket completely with 3D technology, 3D printing technology, which means they have developed very sophisticated, large 3D printers within their facilities. They have that capability. That's a valuable capability well outside of rocketry. So Relativity has announced that it's going to forego bidding on the present round of military launch contracts that the Space Force has. And they say the reason is because they're not going to be able to do their first launch until 26, and that'll be too late for this round, so there's no point for them bidding. In looking at this, there's one thought that came to my mind, which is, why did they abandon the Terran 1 rocket so quickly and go straight to the Terran R? It put a 3-year delay in any launches they could do. And the thing that occurred to me is that they might have looked at the regulatory atmosphere right now under the Biden administration and decided they weren't going to be able to get any launches off anyway. And that's been the case. There have been very few new rocket companies in the United States that have been launching in the last 2 years. They've almost stopped. It used to be a lot. Now there's none. And they might have decided, you know, let's wait and see if the new administration comes in and we might have a better regulatory atmosphere. And we'll do it with a better rocket at the time. And so that's what I think is going on here, at least partly. Either way, they are not in the game for these military contracts right now, John.
All right, this is my favorite story. We're on board the Vomit Comet, and there is a new idea for how to deal with an asteroid that hardly holds together with low G gravity. What is this I'm looking at on your site, Bob? What is that?
It's called Space. It's called Space Hopper, and it's not really any. It's a demo. It's an engineering demo test. This is a German company called ETH Zurich. They actually had a student project. This was originally just a student project, and it still is a student project, but they've upgraded it, and they're pushing forward aggressively. So what Space Hopper is, it's a three-legged hopper that is designed to use its legs to adjust its center of gravity. And the reason it does that is once it hops off an asteroid, there's so little gravity that the thing could start tumbling. And so how to prevent it from tumbling and then land safely on its legs, the legs bounce in and out, maneuver themselves, changing the center of gravity, and then get the thing oriented in the right position so that it can then come down, slowly come down and land properly. And so they tested this on the Vomit Comet, on a was a UG plane, and I've got a video on Behind the Block. You can watch this. It's very cool to watch this thing. The legs move about until they got the thing oriented the way it's supposed to be. Now, it's zero G. It's not micro G, which would be at an asteroid, but the difference is very minimal. And so they were able to test the software and the design, and it worked. So now they can move on to bigger things. So this could be major technology we see showing up in future asteroid mining operations, John. How to get to an asteroid, stay with it, and explore it by hopping about on this kind of vehicle.
Bob Zimmerman, it might have helped fly from tipping over and hiding in that crevasse once upon a time. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.